The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. While I'm on vacation, I've left you in the capable hands of Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Once again, his Bradness.
Capable. Capable? Where'd you get that idea?
Welcome back. Your dreams were your
dreams. Welcome back indeed. Glad you could join us here this afternoon on the Peter B. Collins Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly, humble citizen, investigative journalist and blogger. Standing in for Peter B. while he's enjoying the lovely resort town of Cincinnati, Ohio. Yeah. Oh, getting a little worked up in that first hour. I think it's still in me. I'm going to go to momentarily to Scott Dick, our military correspondent. And later this hour, everyone's favorite segment, Desi Doyen and her Green News Report. And next hour, Elizabeth de la Vega. Yeah, it's Accountability Thursday. It's Accountability Day every day when I'm around. John Gideon and Ellen Tyson from Voters Unite also coming up later in the show. Your calls, give us a call, 888-5-PETER-B. Like to hear from as many of you as we can. You got a voice, use it. 888-573-8372. A man who does use his voice, who we hear from frequently, and it's always good to. Dave in Eureka. Oh, Dave, what's on your mind, my friend?
Well, Brad, you do a commendable job, and Peter's a pretty courageous soul to select one as capable as yourself to cover for him.
You're very kind. Thank you, sir.
I had been pondering as I've been waiting here the answer to my own question, because I've been wondering how so many people, elected officials, can confuse a president who gets himself seduced into a sexual indiscretion and tries to deny it. How they could compare that, somehow comparable, to an administration that fabricates all kinds of justifications to invade countries for their personal profit. An administration that rigs elections, that bankrupts our treasury, hardcore criminals. How could they do that? And, of course, the answer I'm coming up with is they found ways to steal our free press. That, you know, that you... Peter, you're a rarity that can actually stand up and speak the truth. We're living in a time and a country where reporters that go out to find out what's really going on for our own interests, mm-hmm. they're not doing that anymore. They're answering to...
No, that's right. And listen, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be doing this job if the media were doing... what they're supposed to be doing. I'm just a guy, Dave, like you. I'm a citizen. I've ended up doing what I'm doing because nobody's home. Because there's the lights are on, but nobody's home. And then CNN and Washington Post and AP and all the rest wonder why their ratings are going down, why they can't sell newspapers. It's because they're not doing their job.
What kind of sleazy wimp Congress members, what kind of sleazy wimp citizens stand back and allow this to happen right before our eyes? We are losing a great country and letting it happen.
Well, we're not going to let it happen. You're not going to let it happen. I'm not going to let it happen. I know what you do, Dave. I know how you fight every day, every week up there in Eureka. Keep up that work. I got to jump off. Always good to hear from you. Thanks, my friend. Keep up the good fight, Dave. All right, we're going to jump over to Scott Dick. I think we got him on the line here. Scott Dick.
I'm here, Brad.
Hey, Scott, the Peter B. Collins regular military affairs correspondent. Good to talk to you, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. It's always a pleasure, Brad.
Great to have you here. I'll tell you in advance, I'm a little irked today. Just a little irked.
Slightly, so. Could it be because our Congress is what Congress?
Yeah, what Congress? What the fact that the Supreme Court, of all people, is a hero today, this is how we're scraping the bottom of the barrel at this point, Scott Dick. I mean, we've got to turn to the Supreme Court and say, oh, look, they're heroes. This Supreme Court, this Antonin Scalia, who has allowed all of this to happen in the first place, who couldn't even stand up for the Constitution. He calls himself a constitutionalist, an originalist. Hardly anything but when he can stand by and say, no, I know what it says in the Constitution about keeping habeas corpus. corpus that it shall not be removed, but I'm not going to. That's what he did. Anyway, look, Scott, tell us about the military aspects of this, the implication of Scalia's dissent and the decision overall. Does this have a direct aspect to our military, to our fighting troops?
Actually, it brings relief to our troops because in many ways, and one of the ways is that we are a country who may not torture, may not treat prisoners inhumanely, cruelly, or use degrading treatment. It also shows that to the rest of the world, we actually are a country that might, on some occasion, work by the rule of law and abide by something in this, that we call the Constitution, which is supposed to be our most important document. The claim that, first of all, he says we're at war with radical Islamists. I don't know on what basis he's making that claim. He has no factual basis. We attacked, we conducted a preemptive attack on a country that has done us no harm. Second, he said the bait and switch, I don't understand. That's a term that you use when you're talking about used car salesmen and people who entice you to come in the retail store and then they defraud
right.
you in some way.
Right.
The only people involved in defrauding the commanders on the ground has been the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how this is going to make the war harder on us because it's not a war. It says it will almost certainly cause more Americans to be killed. That is sort of the conservative wet dream.
Where does he get that? What's the and we should say, just to straighten this out, because I'm even a little confused, the Supreme Court decision was a good one because it restored habeas corpus, but Scalia in the background says that, oh, we will rue the day that this decision was made to restore the Constitution, and that it will almost certainly cause more Americans to be killed. Now, how does he figure that? Because we've got guys who are out there fighting, and, when they're captured, they just turn around and say, well, you know, the hell with America. They don't give any charges. They don't, give a right to an attorney and everything else. What is he thinking? And I hate to ask you, Scott Dick, to get into the head of Antonin Scalia, but what is he thinking there when he says this is going to cause more Americans to be killed?
Well, Brad, first of all, there's plenty of room for you and me and Peter and Desi and a bunch of us to fit in his head, okay?
It's a big head, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they have to cut out doorways so he can go get his head through them.
Right.
Well, he's convinced he's a constitutional genius, I can tell. I don't know. For him, he's regurgitating some right-wing talking points, and he's confusing conventional warfare with covert warfare, covert being spy on spy.
Mm-hmm.
We have no idea what has happened in spy on spy kind of warfare that we conducted, say, during the Cold War, where they had poisonous tips on umbrellas, and those were the Russian guys, and they did this, and we did that. He's confusing that with conventional warfare. We have troops in uniform, and the thing about Guantanamo is that it's not like those prisoners were delivered based on a combat force, a U.S. combat force, engaging in combat, and then, requiring the surrender or be killed kind of situation. You know, you go into a bunkhouse, and you capture people rather than kill them.
Yeah, and I don't know where they even got these people.
You know how they got them, Brad?
Yeah.
They got them by paying bounties to the Northern Alliance, who delivered them, said
right.
these were Al-Qaeda members, in cargo containers.
That's right. And you know what? You give me $1 million, I'll turn over Desi in a heartbeat. Sorry, Des, you got to go. We can find terrorists if you pay enough. You know, we'll turn in anybody as a terrorist.
Exactly.
Two thirds of the prison. I read this earlier. Two thirds of the 800 prisoners who they've had down in Guantanamo were freed. Without charge after several years in captivity. If they were so big and bad, these horrible criminals that were out to get us, what the hell are we doing freeing two-thirds of them, Scott? It's almost as if they were lying to us when they told us these people were dangerous.
Exactly. And the second part is, it's not like we have not been able to bring our own terrorists that used bombs and killed hundreds of people and bring them to justice in the criminal court system, and then finally executed. Timothy McVeigh is a very good example of that. He was given his constitutional protections, and he was executed as a terrorist. I don't understand, really. It's as if they want to create, well, it is. They wanted to create a parallel system. So I think they could use, I think that harsh breakdown techniques and the torture was designed to punish these people and to sort of serve warning that the United States was not going to play by the same old tired rules, you know, the law of warfare, law of land warfare, the Geneva Convention, and the right of habeas corpus.
Well, that sure scared the hell out of them. I'm sure they don't want to attack us now that we've shown who's the new sheriff in town. Scott Dick, hang in there with us. We're going to talk about this much more. Take your calls. Some of these admirals and generals, and they're all getting their medals of freedom now. We're going to talk about that with our military affairs correspondent, Scott Dick. Give us a call, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. Brad Friedman in for Peter B. Collins. Stick with us.
Best to let them know that we care for every last one of them that's over there, whether we belong over there or not. Somebody over here loves us and needs us. Well, now that's about all that there is to tell about that little trip into living hell. And if I ever go back over there anymore, hope there's none of our boys there for me to sing for. I hope that war is over with and they all come back home to stay in peace.
Amen, Brother Johnny. Speaking to us from beyond the grave, talking about a different war, one that sounds really familiar to me. Speaking with military affairs correspondent Scott Dick, I'm Brad Friedman in for Peter B. Collins today and again tomorrow. Scott, before I get back to you, I wanted this in from AP that I think will be interesting to you. Duncan had, what's his name? Atrios has this over on his blog today. The U.S. government has photographic evidence that a Guantanamo Bay inmate was tortured with a knife after being taken to Morocco by U.S. forces, a British human rights group said Tuesday. Reprieve said their client, Binyam Mohammed, had his genitals slashed repeatedly with a doctor's scalpel while in custody in Morocco after he was flown there from Pakistan by American officials in 2002. It also said his U.S. captors later took pictures of the abuse to show authorities that his wounds were healing. Hey, Scott, how's that going to set with our troops next time they're captured?
Well, that's, you know, that was the whole point of the rendition program, is to take, if you couldn't create an extra legal facility to do torture on your own, so you just rendered them to another location, which, by the way, is prohibited by the Geneva Convention, specifically in Article 3, which makes it a felony. So those pictures, you know, they're saying that the photos of Abu Ghraib are one of the strongest jihadist recruiting tools that they have, whether it's al-Qaeda or not. I mean, we paint them as the big bag terrorist, the 10-foot terrorist that sleeps under every, you know, everybody's bed. But there are plenty of other homegrown organizations around the world that that's their only means of resistance. And I'm not calling them resistance fighters. It's just that's the nature. Remember,
sure,
General Odom said, conducting a war on terror is like conducting a war on the night attack.
On the night attack? Explain that.
Well, the night attack is a technique. It's
right.
An abstract. It's a thing. That it's a tool. And Odom was making the point is, how do you conduct a war on something like that? So it's nonsensical to say the war on terror, because that opens the door. That means that you can make it whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, apparently the way you do it is poorly, and you make things worse rather than better, because that seems to be what's happened here. Admiral Mullen talked about stop loss this week.
Well, two things.
Fill us in on that. And then, Brennan, by the way, hang in there, Brennan and Salinas. We're going to get to you shortly. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, he went out and he was talking to units out at Fort Bliss. They're third. They're on the, he said, how many? He had people raise their hands. How many tours you been? Three. Most of half the room had been three tours in Iraq, Afghanistan. Stop loss is not going away. It's about 11,000. Now, to put this in perspective, that's two fully combat brigades that we have of troops serving against their will. So what the Department of Defense likes to do, and Rumsfeld was master at this, to say, oh, we've had millions of troops serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, and this is just a small fraction of just a barely measurable, you know, it was a bunch of crap. When you have 11,000, that is the equivalent of two full-up combat brigades.
Right.
And they're serving against their will. And so I brought this up to Peter 2 years ago. I don't remember if you remember that famous quote from Bush, one of those night talks he gave where he said, everyone is a volunteer. No, that's a lie. That's a blatant lie.
Well, aren't they? They are volunteers, no?
No, not these 11,000 who've been held against their will.
Because they can't go, because
they can't get out.
Change the rules. They move the goalpost on their contracts, essentially, correct?
Well, they just basically voided the contract, and they're serving at the pleasure. They're serving for the duration. Now, in mm-hmm. a time of war, my father fought in China. He signed up for the duration.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, in the war on terror, there is no end point. It's endless. That's why they call it the war on terror instead of something else, the war on Saddam Hussein or the war on al-Qaeda or the war on Osama bin Laden.
Right.
And so these kids are getting recycled. They'll go through the whole prep, the training prep. They'll go through the whole deployment, and then they'll come back and they'll train their replacements and then hope if they're not in one of these really specialty MOSs, military occupational specialties, that they won't get stop-lost again. They could be stop-lost as many times as the government feels it an operational necessity.
There is no limit on how long they can keep doing that?
No. No. So it's
And that's why, and Scott, tell me what you think here. It seems to me they came up with some other nonsense, some other reasons, but it seems to me that this is why the White House opposes the GI Bill, period. Because if you give the opportunities to these kids to get, I mean, can they stop them from getting out and going to college under this new GI Bill, the same GI Bill that the veterans of World War II got? But apparently, these guys fighting this war on supposed terror are not stop loss to keep them from going to college if they did pass this GI Bill?
No, they would have like a revolt. They'd have a mutiny. They're keeping the stop loss. They're keeping these specialized MOSs. I don't know what they are because they haven't released them. I haven't seen the list lately. But there's
right.
like military police specialists and, you know, the guys who run prisons. Those are specialties that are low density, that kind of really low, what I call low density MOSs, where they've spent a lot of money and they just can't get them into the pipeline with any kind of experience. Senior NCOs they're keeping. And you take stop loss operating mm-hmm. in the background of people's minds, and then you take the comments of John McCain saying when answering the question, when are the chiefs going to come back? He said, well, it doesn't really matter.
Yes.
And it's a devastating morale buster knowing that, you know, any unit, they know that they're on a 15-month tour. It could extend it. Anytime the government failed, they could change it to 18 months.
Well, they compare this to, because his argument, McCain's argument was, oh, it doesn't matter how long they stay there. What we want to do is get rid of the casualties. As if there are no casualties, then everything will be okay again. And he compares it to Germany and South Korea. But in Germany and in Japan and South Korea, these troops who, yes, are out there, they're out there with their families and with their children.
And the governments, the indigenous governments are paying a big portion, like in the 70 to 80% of what it costs to maintain troops there. And it has been for about 35 or 40 years.
Military affairs correspondent Scott Dix going to stay with us for one more segment, and we will take your calls. Brennan, hang in there. I didn't get to you. I'm going to right after the break, I promise. Brad Friedman in for Peter B. Collins. Right back.
Are you interested in saving thousands of dollars on your medical expenses? You can travel abroad with OneWorldHealthcare.org to a top-class medical center and get quality care for a fraction of the cost. Savings of up to 75% are realistic. OneWorldHealthcare.org.
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show, up and down the left coast. I'm off on vacation, and pleased to welcome your able blogger and all-around radio guy, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com.
Sign up for you.
back to the Peter B. Collins Show. Brad Friedman in for Peter B. Speaking with military affairs correspondent Scott Dick. I'm going to get to your calls as well. 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. Scott, let me take a quick call here. Brennan in Salinas. Hey, Brennan, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. What's up, my friend?
Hey, I'd like to thank you guys for your show. I'm a first-time caller, first-time listening. I usually always listen to those other buttheads that have nothing good to say. And
who are you talking about?
I'm glad he listened.
Who? You go ahead, name names. You're allowed to do. Yeah.
I'm talking about Michael Savage.
Michael Savage, butthead. Who else you got?
Who else? Sean Hannity.
Butthead. All right. Who else?
Rush Limbaugh. The butthead.
All right. You see, we are raising the discourse in American society. Glad you tuned in, Brennan. Great to hear from you. Any thoughts, questions, concerns?
I just like to say that you know what?
What?
What Judge Scalia did and what Ruth Bader Ginsburg did is a good thing for America. We need to have our habeas corpus. I totally feel that our government is turning into a fascist government. They're taking away our laws, especially with this, with the Patriot Act. Oh, my goodness. You can't say no more how disgusting the Patriot Act is. But you know what? I am going to be a dedicated listener to this show because I have been going through the dial trying to find someone who is just going to tell us the truth and not go along with the rest of these buttheads. It's just...
Well, Brad, let me jump in there.
They're all falling in line like they're getting paid by one person who's telling them what to say.
And
I can't trust the guy who visits the White House and then comes back and tells me opposing things. I just can't trust it.
No, you're right. You can't. And you came to the right place. And, Brennan, let me just to fill in, if you think you're enjoying the show today, wait until the real host, Peter B. Collins, is back. He's back next week. So keep your dial tuned right here.
Whoa,
check in with my work at bradblog.com. Yes, yeah?
Don't forget, I'm on from 6 to 8 on this station.
Oh, there you go. Well, you're on 6 to 8 on KRXA in Monterey.
Yes, yes.
Thank you. There you go.
Magnificent. I'm never changing the dial again.
Attaboy. Thanks, Brennan. Appreciate it. Although I do think I need to clear up one thing. He said to what Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Scalia did was great. What Ginsburg did was great. What Scalia did was not so great because he dissented from restoring habeas corpus. Thanks for that call, Brennan. Thank you for mentioning that, Scott Dick. You're on every day now, 6 to 8?
Monday through Friday, 6 to 8. On Saturdays, 1 to 3.
Oh, rock and roll. With the Tasty Planet, correct?
Yes.
Tastyplanet.org. Aside from being a military affairs guy, he's also a food guy on KRXA 540 in Monterey.
It was a reaction to 20 years of military food.
I bet. Peter Pace. General Peter Pace, he's getting the Medal of Freedom. Does he deserve it, Scott Dick?
He's one of the shortest-serving Joint Chiefs chairman since General Maxwell Taylor in 1964.
Really?
Gates couldn't get rid of him quick enough. He didn't wait 1 minute to get rid of him, and then they said, well, it's going to be a contentious Iraqi war hearing, so we're going to get rid of him. No, he didn't like him because he was the quintessential bootlicker, and this was a Marine Corps four-star general.
Yeah.
Who got promoted to be, because he was such a great yes person, that he got promoted by Rumsfeld to be the chairman who rubber stamped everything that Rumsfeld wanted to do. And by the way, Brad, remember the Rumsfeld manipulation and propaganda campaign of these so-called independent media analysts who were really retired generals who were also military industrial lobbyists. Pace had to have known about it and had to be part of it to be the assistant chairman where he came from. So he was part and parcel of the whole thing. But the way the administration works to keep people like Bremer and those of his ilk quiet is to give them the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Sure. Bremer, Tenet, they all got the – I mean, at this point, the Medal of Freedom is like a scarlet A in this administration. Now, the Gates, who couldn't wait to get rid of Peter Pace, as you suggest, he has nothing to do with the Medal of Freedom. That's all from the White House, correct?
Right, right. And the thing – the second part of that is it's like Bush begrudgingly gives one to Tom Lantos, who's recently deceased, but, he's a liberal – or has liberal leaning, so they have to wait till he's dead. And then you give it to these live sycophants, which I think diminishes the stature of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, rendering almost meaningless
I think so, yeah.
Vaguely.
It really does. Now, there was a, while the Republicans in Congress have been busy making sure that the GI Bill doesn't pass and blocking that because these people who go out for years and fight for us, our supposed freedom here, they don't deserve to go to college like their fathers, like their grandfathers, like so many, frankly, of these folks serving in Congress. There's still fights against the Veterans Administration and the way they are treating veterans still.
There's a lawsuit filed to force the Veterans Administration to take better care, and part of that was an email that they found where an administrator was actually telling doctors not to outright grant PTSD diagnoses because – for, you know, because we have all these compensation-seeking veterans. So that went over like a lead balloon. And I think the big fight against the GI Bill is because we have the so-called Republican conservatives, the warmongers, if you will, who can't be seen
as... Oh, I will.
Yeah. Sorry?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, can't be seen as not supporting the troops. And their claim is that the it will reduce the retention by 16%. I read the exact same memo they got from the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, who said it will reduce the cost of recruiting, and it'll almost pay for itself, Brad, and it'll recruit 16% higher quality candidates than some of the thugs who have felony conviction waivers coming in now. So it's a bunch of BS that it's a bunch of specious comments that they're making, so-called reasons why they can't get behind the GI Bill. And all the GI Bill would do is make sure that our vets get a college education. See, the thing is, too, if you lose an arm and a leg, you're not going to serve. If you lose a leg, they might bring you back on active duty. There's some of that going on.
Yep.
If you lose an arm and a leg or an eye, or you have a TBI or something like that, you're not going to be on active duty. There's no GI Bill that you're going to get. I mean, this one that they have is crappy. So you're just
out of luck
at
that point.
So they want you to serve 12 years before you're fully vested in their program, and it's just a few dollars thrown at the system they have now. So nobody listen to that garbage where they say it'll affect retention. Because it will bring in
more troops than might want to get out to go to college, right?
Exactly. And the CBO has it's only a 5-page memorandum. I read it to see, and they're selectively quoting from that to justify not supporting the troops. They say it's too expensive. It's not. They said it's too hard to administer. Mm. Well, you know, they administered the program when there was only stubby pencils, Brad, back in 1945 and 46
right.
and 47,
Yes, it would
48.
Be a bookkeeper. That's right. I noticed that as well. It would be a bookkeeping nightmare. Are you kidding me?
Well, see, and if we get John McCain, who has described himself as completely computer illiterate, it will be a bookkeeping nightmare because he won't understand it and he'll want to do stubby pencil.
And he is on record as being against the GI Bill, right?
Well, he's the one who brought out his own with Lindsey Graham. To mm-hmm. run these sort of we really support the troops, and if you support James Webb, I always get confused.
Jim Webb, yeah.
Jim Webb, getting confused with the Dragnet character. then you're really you're not supporting the troops because you'll take away the best and brightest NCOs, and you know blah 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 BS. It's not even about the money. I think there's a certain mentality, Brad, in the military complex. They didn't pay for my college. So why should we pay for theirs? Except in McCain's case, we paid for every dime of his education.
Education, that's right. And he has the temerity, the nerve to turn around and claim that he is supporting the troops by refusing to give them the college education they deserve. I mean, you know, I could...
hey, Brad, one more thing about McCain
that
really frosts me. He has been a product his entire life, and it will be from cradle to grave, of a government-run healthcare system. His father was an admiral in the Navy. Mm-hmm. He was in the Navy. He was born into the military medical system, and he will die. He will leave this planet in the military medical system, and he doesn't want anybody else, any other American, to enjoy that. And I find that creepy, and I can't think of the other words, and it would involve, I think, profanity.
Yeah, it's creepy. It's appalling. And it's infuriating. And, it's very difficult because it has been infuriating for years. And I hate to get on here, one of these guys, on and on about Bush sucks, McCain sucks, they're terrible. But it is beyond description how hypocritical these guys are, how cruel they are. You, like you said, you pointed to that email that you know that they're saying don't diagnose these guys with PTSD, you know, after sending them off into war. Why does John McCain hate the troops? He does. Clearly, he hates the troops. What else can you conclude?
Even worse than that kind of emotion. He doesn't see the troops as individuals. He sees them as a fungible asset. He sees them just like George Bush and Dick Cheney. They don't see them as individuals. They see them as a commodity. And I would say that if they could contract them out, they would. But they already have. There are more government contractors in Iraq than there are troops there.
And they are. Listen, if you are a commander, I don't need to tell you this, but if you're a commander in the field, if you're in the military, to a certain extent, troops are commodities in that this is how, looking back at the Civil War, you know, troops were bags of fluid, essentially, and you figure out how to kill them. And that is, from a military standpoint, that's one thing. From a oversight standpoint, from a congressional standpoint, it's those guys who are supposed to be looking out for their well-being, and that is what is completely absent. And as I got to get to a break.
Okay, one small disagreement is that the troops, we have forced them to become more and more and more independent. As we load them with technology, we force them to be more individual thinkers. We train our troops to think, to initiate, to not just be robots. And so they aren't like it was. We just lined people up shoulder to shoulder and blasted off, muzzle rounds. These are much more individuals and commanders up to about the brigade command. They know their soldiers individually by name.
Fair enough. But remember, it was sort of a clumsy comparison, but my point is there's a difference between what the military does with them from a tactical standpoint, or tactical point of view, and a difference between what Congress and the executive branch is supposed to be doing in looking out for those troops, their well-being.
Yeah, we're not really in disagreement. We're just nuance.
Yes, indeed. Scott Dick, thank you. Peter B. Collins, regular military affairs correspondent, also host of The Tasty Planet.
And the Scott Dick Show. Take care, Brett.
And the Scott Dick Show. And KRXA 540 in Monterey. Check him out at tastyplanet.org. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Brad.
Great to have you, my friend. Good to talk to you. All right, when we come back, Desi Joyen and the Green News Update. Is there any news today, Des? No, nothing at all? Nothing at all. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Brad Friedman. More right after this.
It's not easy being green.
No, it's not.
It seems you blend in with so many ordinary things.
Yes, that's our Green News Update theme music. It can mean only one thing.
Like flashy sparkles in the water or stars in the sky.
It means it's time for our Green News Update. And with Desi Doyen, happy to bring it to you here. Started doing these when I was sitting in for my friend John Scott down at Green 960 in San Francisco, one of Peter B's affiliates, and we're glad to keep it going now because, like all of the other issues we report here, Desi, these are issues that are not properly covered, not properly reported by the media. Am I correct?
You are correct, sir.
Thank you, sir.
And they don't go away just because they aren't reported on.
Really?
That's true.
They still exist? Even though a tree doesn't fall in the media,
Something like that.
All right, well, what you got for us today in the Green News Report?
Let's see. About 500 billion plastic bags are produced globally each year, the ones that you get at the grocery store and everywhere. And they take about 1,000 years to decompose.
Yeah.
And these discarded bags can migrate to the ocean. They're ingested by wildlife who mistake them for food because they apparently don't don't go shopping.
Delicious.
And now somebody has come up with a solution for disposing of those plastic bags in a really green, ecological way.
Putting them under my sink in my kitchen.
No, not quite. Oh. Actually, better than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this kid, Daniel Bird, discovered a bacteria, and he believes that it can eliminate these bags in about 3 months. And what he did, he came with the idea that if plastic bags are can be degraded by microorganisms in nature, then he ought to be able to find out which bacteria those are. Because, you know, when you see bacteria, plastic, it eventually falls apart.
Right.
It does decompose. It just doesn't really go away as far as the
So we need to
particles.
Create some super bacteria that can do
that
it
actually
faster.
Eat the plastic that like it for dinner.
A high, a very strong, giant bacteria. Why,
no,
what could possibly go wrong
tiny bacteria.
Here?
No, I no, see, basically this is what he did.
I see bacteria eating
No, it
the
won't
West
be
Coast.
The killer bacteria.
It won't, okay.
No, it won't. So what he did was he collected soil samples from a local landfill site and spent 3 months culturing them and found the bacteria, was able to isolate the bacteria that actually liked to eat it. And the bacteria loved it. They totally destroyed and ate through the plastic bag soup that he made. Yeah.
So and, this is a huge finding.
It's a pretty good finding,
You called him a kid, though. What
I
do you
did.
Mean, kid?
He's a teenager. In Canada, he won the 2008 Canada-wide Science Fair in Ottawa.
A teenager came up with this.
Yes.
A Canadian, nonetheless.
I know, those
Canadians. And we couldn't even figure out how to do that. Our greatest scientists, our greatest minds.
Best part is, he says, you can also do it at home without any fancy lab equipment. You have to go look it up, though. You have to have your own little fermenter and stuff like that.
Okay.
We also hear a lot about renewable fuel.
Yeah.
And here is one biofuel that's really green. It's an emerald green crude oil. It's actually colored green. And it's produced by photosynthesis in algae, a particular kind of genetically altered algae. And it is something that can fuel cars, trucks, and aircrafts. It doesn't even consume crops.
Is this that switchgrass stuff?
No, this is from algae. What it is, it's genetically altered so that it actually produces as part of its physical processes, it actually produces oil, a type of biofuel
really?
Oil. Yeah. And
now, yesterday you reported in the Green News Report that there was algae across 1,000 miles in the Gulf.
Different kind of algae.
Different kind. So we don't want that.
No, we don't want that algae.
Okay.
It would be cool if we could make the oil, I suppose, in
out of
the Gulf.
Gulf.
Then we'd have an oil slick, so that would be a problem.
Okay.
So that wouldn't work either.
All right.
But
always something. We need to get some Canadian kids on this
exactly.
and work out the details.
So I just thought that was really cool because, you know, you can basically put you can actually make the algae, put algae farms that would be out on what we call non-arable land, non-farmland, rather than like crops for ethanol, for example, which would use up actual land for food. This would not use up any land that would have to be used for food at all.
So you're not eating into the food supply.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, you already know about the wacky weather we've been having. Just for an update on that, there are wildfires pretty much all across Northern California, extending from the wine country down into the Central Valley. You know, mostly because the high temperatures, I think it was 100 yesterday somewhere in the Central Valley where they were trying to fight a fire. And it's an early start and not a very good one to this year's fire season. And in the Midwest, the governor of Iowa said that the 3 weeks of storms that killed 10 people have left 9 rivers above record water levels. And he's calling it a 500-year type of event. But this is what I find odd. Now, the forecasters are saying that the floodwaters will eventually, they think, this weekend, extend all the way to St. Louis, which, of course, experienced major flooding in 1993.
My mom and dad are in St. Louis.
If it's a 500-year flood, then it's coming a little early.
Now, all of a sudden, I care about this.
You know, and they think that it's going to also affect not only crops that are not able to be planted or are ruined by the flooding or, you know, can't be harvested. Not only is it going to raise the cost of those commodities, but the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is probably going to have to close a 200-mile stretch of the Mississippi, which is the nation's primary trade waterway.
There was also, just to fill in just a couple of details there, 4 people were killed in this tornado at the Boy Scout camp.
Yeah.
40 were injured. That was in Iowa. 2 people were dead, meantime, in northern Kansas after tornadoes cut a path through there. 2 Maryland men with heart conditions died this week. One thing after another, and I think Progress actually points out that although the deadly weather has been front page news all season, the news channels dedicate hours to extreme coverage, but they are not tying it to global warming, and they report good news. ABC Good Morning America ran a segment where they actually noted noted that 90 records have been tied or broken across the East, and they interviewed eminent climatologist Steve blah blah blah. While this heat wave, like all other heat waves, is made by Mother Nature, we've been fooling around by turning the knob and making it a little bit hotter. And then, of course, the right-wing media outlets went crazy saying that ABC was blaming global warming, and so that's what they're up against when they try to tie these dots together.
That's funny. So, like you said, global warming.
Global warming?
Yes. No, it's global warming.
No.
Now, I just wanted to, we talked about how on Tuesday the Senate Republicans blocked further rescinding the tax subsidies and the tax breaks for oil companies to the tune of $17 billion that they already receive every from the U.S. government for our taxpayer dollars.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, every quarter they're making upwards of $30 to $40 billion per quarter in net profit, not gross. And so basically Republicans block those bills to sort of, in a way, sort of require the oil companies to pay up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're basically what I wanted to point out was that one of the deals that was offered to the oil companies in that bill that was blocked was that the oil companies could have been allowed to bypass that windfall profits tax altogether if that they just agreed to invest that windfall profits tax money instead into renuable energy instead of
so they
the
could have
government.
Used
they
so could have used
it.
That money on their own for R&D. They
right.
didn't have to give away. It wasn't these going to ruin the oil companies
right.
if they take this.
Right. And they also included measures to make oil and gas price gouging a federal crime, to a rule to allow the Justice Department to sue OPEC for price fixing, measures designed to constrain oil and gas market speculation, which is what is also leading to higher gas prices. Basically, you know, they said, no, we can't have those things.
Because they're Republicans.
Yep, pretty much.
Desi Doyen and our Green News Update, smartly done.
There's way more.
Well, that's what we'll be back to do tomorrow.
Okay.
All right, I'll give you a whole hour. You want a whole hour?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, Desi Doyen with our Green News Update. Thank you, Desi. We will talk to you tomorrow. We will be back to more outrage after this break. Elizabeth De La Vega, back to habeas corpus and everything else. Brad Friedman on the Peter B. Collins Show.